on a rooftop, and you know, they discredit all the witnesses one way or another and discounted all their testimony and never introduced that into the decision making.
Although this summer, for the first time, in a significantly less serious case where Steve Argue yesterday actually convicted of punching Officer Lefebvre, felony assault, and obstructing an arrest in the May 22nd protest against the war in Yugoslavia at the McPherson Center. In that situation, the Citizens Police Review Board is now voting for an independent investigator. Now, partially we can attribute that to the fact that there's a majority on the City Council which at least claimed to be more progressive in November when it was elected than the previous majority that was in power when Happy John Dying was out, the Kennedy-Rotkin Council. But is there another way of, do you think that the Dying case had an influence on the power of the, there were three city Citizens Police Review Board members who wanted an independent investigation, and three who apparently didn't or wanted to at least delay it. That was headed by Lisa Rose. Rose and Tony Guerrero on the minority changed their votes and decided to vote for an independent investigation, I think partially to some extent because there were people petitioning for a recall.
And we are talking about an independent investigation in the current May 22nd case, not in the John Dine case, where it had been a much more significant and was much more important.
From the Citizens Police Review Board, but was that also a function of that shooting 2 years ago, do you think?
I think it may play into it. I think the public outcry at that time, back in 1997, was so strong that it was almost a slap in the face of this community that they didn't hold these hearings. And there was similar outrage around the incidents on May 22nd and the police accusations of police misconduct. And I think that at that time, again, we had enough public pressure to sway that board to change its mind. I think it's some of it's probably due to what went down with John Dine, but I think they didn't want a repeat of that, and I think if they had voted not to have independent investigations, they were scared of the repercussions of that.
Well, of course, now we have the first testimony gathering supposedly to begin tomorrow when Diane Christensen, the Berkeley-based private investigator, is coming down to begin reviewing witnesses. She's promised a public process, although that would be solely her decision, and the question of whether any of that stuff is ever going to get out in the final report remains cloudy, because even when we think that it's not going to get out, because City Attorney John Barrasoni has issued a written opinion that everything the private investigator Diane Christensen, the independent investigator, does is going to be kept kind of locked up as a police personnel file matter. Should people cooperate with this investigation?
That still remains to be seen. In my mind, as far as it remaining classified, if it's going to remain classified, then no. I don't think people should. I'm not planning on taking any active role in this investigation if it stays private and does not become a public matter. So that would be my answer. No, it should. People should not cooperate unless the city kowtows to our demand. That
kowtows, you mean, makes an honest and reasonable accession to that.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
I think having an open public process doesn't involve kowtowing. It simply involves opening up the curtains, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe that was the wrong term to use.
Kowtowing is a form of a submission, I suppose.
That's what we want, really. We want them to submit to our demand that this be open public hearings and public testimony.
Well, they will tell you, of course, it's not their place. They can't do it because state law and the city council law, but most importantly, the state code will prohibit that from happening. And I guess the answer then is simply to fire the police force and appoint a whole bunch of non-violent peacekeepers.
Hey, that's a start.
Thank you very much, Ren.
Thanks.
So, what happened to you, Steve Argue? Steve, give us your concerns about the trial, which you were just found guilty of felony assault on Officer Lefebvre, involving a situation where the defense, your attorney, and you tried to successfully press forward, was not successful, namely defense of others. You were trying to defend Julianne and her child, and the jury, while it thought there may have been some excessive force, apparently didn't feel the force was excessive enough. So give us your sense of how did your attorney conduct that trial?
He failed. I mean, he didn't do many things that were necessary.
From the very beginning, there was a motion put forward to suppress everything on my beating and pepper spraying by Officer Lefevre. Lefevre tackled me down, immediately pepper sprayed me in the eyes, like an inch away, and then grabbed me by the hair, stuffed the pepper spray canister in my mouth, and sprayed the pepper spray down my throat, and then proceeded to beat me, and other cops were involved in that. Well, the prosecution put forward a motion to suppress, which means that we wouldn't be able to talk about that, or show evidence of that, or call witnesses to talk about that. And my lawyer agreed to it. And then next week, he fumbles upon...
Well, didn't he reveal that the reason he'd agreed to it, and he kind of apologized for the mistake, was because he hadn't read it fully?
Yes, he didn't read the motion before he agreed to it.
Which was actually the week before the trial, right?
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead. You were saying, and then you said, the trial, I guess, maybe I'm jumping ahead, but you spoke about witnesses as well. They have been concerned about certain witnesses, or were you thinking of something else?
Probably, if we're going to go through a list, that would be another thing, another problem. I'd put it on the lower end of, in terms of, it was pretty important too. Ben Rice did not want to call witnesses because they were protesters and thought that would taint it in the minds of the jurors. And he called practically no witnesses, even though we had many, many witnesses. And that was a major mistake. I mean, the jury could see quite clearly how many people were around and how few witnesses we had, and that could not have looked good to them. And the fact that we could have had many, many witnesses state, you know, what was going on, how Julianne was being treated, how concerned they were, the screams, the pain she was in, describe it. We could have had many jurors saying that, hopefully jurors saying that eventually too, but many witnesses saying that, and seeing that, or the jury seeing that more. Then another problem was the fact that the closing statements by Ben Rice were very bad. And part of it was along the same lines I talked to a juror who didn't think there was excessive force used on Julianne. The argument was made, the closing arguments by the prosecution, that no excessive force was used. And this only hurts if you struggle and try to get away when you put in a pain compliance hold. Which could have been countered with, all kinds of things, arguments that were very important. It's ridiculous to say that this pain compliance hold only hurts if you're resisting, partly because, you know, all these officers they had saying that were officers that had never seen this particular pain compliance hold, had never practiced it, and didn't really know anything about it. And they had said that on the witness stand. That could have been brought up.
I noticed that Ben wasn't taking any notes during the prosecution's first closing argument statement. I found that kind of interesting because I thought that I would be scribbling away trying to find specific arguments to counter what the prosecution was saying.
Well, that's true. But let me continue this point. And in terms of the excessive force, another thing he didn't bring out, which he could have easily and should have brought out, was the fact that we had eyewitness testimony to the fact that her hand was swollen and red immediately after the incident from David Lynn. Another eyewitness statement from Becky Johnson that her hand was red the day after. Officer Lefevre saying that this pain compliance hold that he had put Julianne in didn't hurt. The pain compliance hold didn't hurt.
I mean, these are things to bring out, you know, in terms of credibility, in terms of making people think about it. And just, he could have just pointed to the picture as well and saying, you know, and brought people's memories back of the screams and everything, you know, that people had seen. But he didn't do those things. Instead, most of his argument centered on the fact that he didn't think I was a very likable person. And this was his defense of me. And he went through a whole number of things. Steve Argue is not the kind of person you want to be around. Steve Argue is the type of person when you're walking down the street, you tend to want to cross the street to avoid him. You don't want anything to do with the people he associates with. When he sells his newspapers, he's obnoxious. He's like, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this. Although, you know, Ben Rice has never seen me sell a newspaper, and I am very courteous when I sell newspapers, actually. He states I'm not the type of person you'd want to have tea with or have a beer with.
Tony Guerrero of the Census Police Review Board has had a number of beers with him.
Yes, he has. So, you know, and then
Ben had tea with you the evening before?
Yes, he did have tea with me. So I guess he didn't enjoy that experience. And then he states that I shouldn't be convicted for those reasons. But the thing is in terms of my character, he's bringing in totally new things. A big part of what the prosecution had been doing through this thing is trying to paint me as this rabid weirdo who was out to get cops, and he was playing right into it, and there was no basis for it, and it was ridiculous, the things he was saying.
Did he talk to you about this beforehand?
No, he didn't talk to me about it beforehand. And then he says, don't convict him, find him not guilty, but right on the bottom of the slip, Steve Argue, go get a life.
And he also called you a nut, as I remember at the very end.
Go get a life, you nut.
I think some of us thought this was significant afterward, because one of the key criteria used to convict you is the issue of what would a reasonable person do if confronted with a woman in pain as you were. Would a punch of the officer in that circumstance be considered reasonable? For him to call you a zealot and a nut would seem to undermine,
right,
you know, that you could be reasonable. In fact, that's what the prosecution was trying to do,
right,
saying that you were not ever a reasonable man.
Right, exactly. That was the whole prosecution's whole point, that I was not reasonable. And, Ben Rice, the jury liked Ben Rice, but they didn't like me. And Ben Rice didn't do his job in defending me. He lied about me. He didn't know a fucking thing about me and talked a whole lot of shit about me and made me look bad and didn't do his job defending me. He also did not give a basis of why, besides a basis of not convicting me on the felony assault and battery, the basis being that excessive force was used. He didn't make those arguments. He also didn't give... And the fact that you know, I am a reasonable person, which I think I made a very good case of on the witness stand, which he destroyed. He blew to all hell. He also didn't make any case as to why resisting, obstructing, or delaying a police officer didn't apply.
That was the other charge you were accused of.
That was the other charge I was accused of and convicted of. You know, when you're charged of a crime, even though it may not be as big as the felony crime, that's a pretty big point for your lawyer to make a point of why the defendant is not guilty of that crime. Resisting, obstructing, or delaying a police officer could have had to do with any number of things the prosecution kept on saying. It could have to do with blocking the van in which Goling was in. Could have had to do with running away. Or it could have had to do with punching Lefevre and Julien getting away. On all of those, there were good arguments to be made. Through the eyewitnesses we had shown that Goling's arrest was wrong. So on that basis, that point should have been made. The point should have been made that and that it's lawful that resisting, obstructing, or delaying only applies to a lawful arrest. and the same things having to do with Julianne and the fact that and her child and the fact that when excessive force is being used, that it doesn't apply, resisting, obstructing, or delaying, and that running away doesn't apply if I hadn't committed a crime. Mm-hmm. All of those points should have been made, and he didn't make those points either.
I know also at one point that he apparently failed to make a crucial objection when the prosecution raised a series of issues about past arrests that had, by understanding, been excluded from the trial as irrelevant. These are, of course, past arrests that I believe show police misconduct, but that's hard to show in the context of a trial where the prosecution is waving around old police reports and you can't cross-examine witnesses. And in declining to object to that particular introduction of evidence, he actually, according to Attorney Kate Wells today, was waiving the right to challenge that on appeal, which I think is a significant thing. Are you familiar with that at all? Were you concerned about that?
I was very concerned about that. When I was on the witness stand, there wasn't anything I could do. I was being asked these questions, and there was no way of not answering them without looking like I wasn't hiding something. And that was the duty of my attorney to step in at that point, which he did not do. We had a motion to suppress, which covered these past incidences of police brutality and police misconduct against me, which of course the police don't present that way, and the prosecution didn't present that way. They presented it at me as this madman going around getting arrested, mm-hmm. instead of someone who's a target of the police for political reasons. So this motion to suppress, basically what was put forward in the beginning of the trial, this motion to suppress, is that these things would not come out in the trial unless I opened the door. So I did nothing to open the door. I'm asked point blank by the prosecution if I'm going around getting in the faces of the police all the time, to which I answered no. And for her, that was the opening the door. But she was actually the one who asked me the question. And she's like, no? And then she pulls out. When I was arrested for selling newspapers on November 13th, something in which I was never charged with any crime for, but spent 4 days in jail and was brutalized by the police, even though it's not illegal to sell newspapers. She brought that up as one incident. Brought up July 20th.
Did Ben object to that? Is that Ben Rice?
No. I guess he objected at some point, but he didn't. He should have objected when this whole thing started. He also July 22nd was brought up, where I was arrested for no reason on Pacific Avenue.
Did you talk to him about this afterward, and did you talk to, let me just ask you that first. Did you talk to him about this afterward?
I briefly, but I don't really see the point of it. I'm not going to have him as an attorney again.
Did you talk to any jurors about the impact of these past incidents? Did they say that this in any way had an impact on them?
I don't know. Actually, no, I didn't talk to them about that.
I didn't either.
I'm sure it would, because for most people, they don't understand what it is to be political and to be targeted by the system and the police for harassment and repression. I'm well known by the police department here. I am a target. I get jaywalking tickets, which I wasn't able to bring in because of the way the whole thing was being presented.
And unfortunately, we can't bring it in either, because we're reaching the end of the show. Right before we leave, we are going to play a very brief update from Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, which is now under significant harassment. They're again being attacked by Santa Cruz police, given tickets and citations. We're going to get a report from Chris Crass on that now, a recorded report from actually last week. Here it is.
Friday, September 17th at 3:12. p.m.
Hello, this is Chris Kraft calling from San Francisco Food Not Bombs, and yes, the police have returned to United Nations Plaza where we serve our nightly community meals and have told us that we are in violation of the law and that serving free food in San Francisco is something that the authorities will not allow or tolerate. There's also a group of students from Marin. There was an article about them in the Chronicle, which outlines the police activity trying to stop them from distributing free sack lunches. Food Not Bombed was approached on two separate occasions by police officers. On one occasion, two members of the group were cited for sharing free food. On another occasion, they were threatened with citation. The police have definitely made it clear that they intend to clear everyone out of United Nations Plaza, everyone who is homeless, everyone who is there in solidarity with people who are living on the street, and that they intend to clear the area of Food Not Bombed. So any support is greatly appreciated. Calling the Board of Supervisors, the Mayor, the DA of San Francisco is greatly appreciated, and any other solidarity. And generally, fighting for civil rights of all people in this society is the best kind of solidarity because this kind of attack happens everywhere in all cities across the country as more and more pressure comes on poor people as our economy continues to benefit the rich at the expense of the vast majority of us. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And that was Chris Crass, Food Not Bombs in San Francisco. This is Robert Norris, the end of Bathrobs Pierce Broadsides. Uncle Dennis is coming up today. I want to remind you, is Victoria Woodhull's birthday. She was the proponent of free love, a spiritual teacher, the first woman to run for the U.S. presidency with Frederick Douglass, probably the only presidential ticket I would have voted for, and a member of the First International, until, of course, she was expelled by Karl Marx. That's Victoria Clifton Woodhull, famous woman, free love advocate, my kind of person. Uncle Dennis will probably give you more details on sexual scandals in the Earth First Movement. He's been keeping a firm hand on that situation, and we'll go into that in greater detail. I want to thank you. Do that again, Uncle Dennis. Thank you for being with me again. We're going to be coming back to you on Sunday, 11 o'clock in the morning, 96.3 FM. We'll have another edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Tune in then.
On the highest bench in the land is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist, rendering opinions when our liberty takes the stand with the gavel of truth in his clenched fist. Housing discrimination was declared illegal, but William can't sell his to Mr. Brown or Mr. Siegel. Well, it might ruffle the feathers of the American eagle, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Interpreting the highest law of our nation is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Affirmative action is reverse discrimination, says our new Chief Justice. Case dismissed. Constitutional intent is what he means to save, lest our founding framing fathers should roll over in their graves. For never in their wildest dreams would they have freed their slaves, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Presiding over cases which will set a precedent is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Fondling his gavel as he makes his argument, ruling who and what and where can be kissed. Homosexuality is anti-family, and all the other judges are inclined to agree. Rather than flunk jury Falwell's test of morality, grins the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Now the Right Reverend Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Preaching from his chamber, it's a sin to abort with a flick of his judicially bent wrist. Women look better in the family way. Barefoot and pregnant is what we used to say. It'll never be the same if they pass the ERA, quoth the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Mm-hmm.
Robert Morris and Becky Johnson for a great show.